7. How is abortion related to feminism? Clearly, the evil of abortion was not part of the original women's rights movement, as the early feminists all considered abortion an exploitation of women by abusive and irresponsible men. How right they were! The pro-life group Feminists for Life exposes the words of so many of the feminist pioneers in their publication, The American Feminist. For example, 1875 speech on social purity specifically discussed abortion and postnatal infanticide, along with rape and prostitution, as male wrongs against women. Susan B. Anthony argued that laws pertaining to these matters, made and enforced exclusively by men, further victimized women while absolving men of all responsibility. Modern feminism is both ideologically and organizationally connected with the promotion of the culture of death. A very cursory view of feminist websites will reaffirm this connection. The website of the radical feminist abortion organization, NARAL, Pro-Choice America, for example, gives undeniable proof of the unholy trinity in full color. NARAL features only 4 items on the issues section of its website: abortion, birth control, sex education, and women of color. The explanations of these issues read like ideological manuals of the demonic mindset that produces these destructive realities. And of course, youth. Vulnerable females and minorities are always the targets of these hateful campaigns. The unholy trinity has gained full force against our families, mostly due to modern, radical, feminist activism. 8. How does abortion liberalization around the world negatively affect the very women it purports to help? It is said that every revolution ends up devouring its own, and the feminist revolution is no different. There is irrefutable evidence now that abortion targets the very population that feminists were supposed to liberate, namely, females. Female infanticide is the ugly hidden secret of the culture of death. It is estimated that as many as 50 million baby girls have been killed in China alone, and India counts 10 million female deaths by abortion in the last 20 years. A 2005 report by the Geneva Center for the Democratic Control of Armed Forces estimates that abortion and female infanticide accounts for 200 million missing women from the world's population. Birth rates of boys to girls are skewed in all regions of the world, including predominantly Catholic Latin America, and are taking an immense human toll on the future of those lands. Nicholas Eberstadt of the American Enterprise Institute has even noted that the discriminatory killing of girls is showing up in Asian American birth rates here in the United States. Quote, "It can happen here? Think again. Quantitative data and the applied statistical reasoning provides us with an unavoidable evidence beyond any reasonable doubt that it is happening here." Unquote. The trend is becoming so alarming that even The Economist magazine dedicated a whole edition in March 2010 to the subject of gendercide. In short, it is hard to see this attack on females as anything other than the revenge of the serpent against the woman. Indeed, the female infanticide phenomenon has been appropriately termed the slaughter of Eve. 9. Who calls abortion a sacrament? Abortion has often been called a sacrament by many in the abortion industry and radical feminists. Abortion is also being labeled a sacrament in deprecating terms by high-profile abortion opponents in order to point out the religious nature and zeal of abortion promotion. The terminology is explicit and, in a sense, shocking for anyone who has true religious sensibilities. Labeling abortion a sacrament emphasizes the blasphemous nature of what abortionists do in their killing centers. It is important for the pro-life movement to constantly point out the spiritual nature of our struggle against the culture of death, so that we address its evil at the deepest level. Appendix A contains an extensive list of quotes about abortions as sacred, holy, a blessing, or a sacrament by abortion promoters. 10. Does the abortion industry use God and religion to promote its killing agenda? The promoters of abortion must necessarily pervert the God-given voice of conscience in the depths of the human heart in order to get people to justify the decision to kill. True abortion ideologues give a religious, almost messianic tone to their propaganda and make abortion a type of salvation for women. They know that if they can convince people that God is on their side, the issues of conscience will be less of a barrier to the choice for abortion. the manipulation of clergy, and the use of religious spiritual metaphors to get women into their killing centers is part and parcel of abortion propaganda. Many clergy have been co-opted into the anti-human causes of fertility control and the killing of children. Margaret Sanger's Negro Project in the early part of the last century sought to sway black communities in America to accept the idea of abortion through the use of black ministers who were the community's most influential leaders. In like fashion, Planned Parenthood Federation of America established a clergy advisory board in 1994 that claims over 2,000 lay and clerical members. Additionally, every year for the past several years, Planned Parenthood has included an interfaith prayer breakfast as part of its annual convention. In 2004, Planned Parenthood hired so-called Reverend Ignacio Castura as their national chaplain. Castura is a Mexican-born United Methodist minister in Los Angeles who works on behalf of reproductive choice and makes him the perfect shill for the abortion fanatics who target Hispanic women in the new market. In case anyone wonders whether this person might just be misguided or taken advantage of by the abortion industry, Planned Parenthood's press release removes all doubt. Quote, he will play a pivotal role in communicating the theological justification for choice, sexuality, and contraception to the Planned Parenthood community and to the general public. Unquote. In other words, Castura is nothing more than a clerical hack for promoting abortion among Hispanics. The target audience for the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice is expressed in a simple racist formula, people of color. They claim to bring the moral power of religious communities to ensure reproductive choice through education and advocacy. However, their concern about the poor should be balanced against their exorbitant salaries and organizational assets. The coalition's president draws a salary of $191,000 and pulled $7.5 million in revenues in 2007 for the cause of reducing the Negro population. In fact, the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice had an exponential rise in revenues from $1.4 million in 2005 to $7.5 million in 2007. The most outrageous of the demonic groups using religion to justify abortion is the so-called Catholics for a Free Choice group, whose main publication is named after the very thing they wish to kill, conscience. Catholics for a Free Choice has a whole series of publications on the theological justification of abortion, one of which is a guide for Catholic women considering abortion that includes a prayer service to assuage their consciences from any guilt beforehand. 11. What is the magnitude of abortion's evil? The killing of innocent babies is intrinsically evil in itself, but it takes on a greater dimension of evil with its growth into a network of systematic extermination, aided and embedded by medical professionals, government leaders, and powerful international organizations with coercive economic and legal power. The statistics-gathering arm of Planned Parenthood, the Guttmacher Institute, estimates that the number of surgical abortions each year amounts to somewhere between 50 and 55 million dead babies worldwide, which is only a very rough estimate. This number does not take into account the millions killed each year by chemical means. I imagine that the real number of surgical abortions could be double this estimate, given the fact that countries without legal abortion do not keep statistics about it. And even in the countries that do, there are varying standards of reporting and tracking. In the vast majority of countries, abortions performed in doctors' private offices are not reported or counted in any official way. Given that abortionists are the ones who have to tell the world how many abortions they commit, they have very little incentive to be truthful about the actual number. In the United States, abortion is mainly a cash business, and it is recognized that abortionists commonly underreport the number of abortions they commit in order to avoid paying taxes. One can also get an idea of the evil of the abortion industry and the evil it spawns by looking at Human Life International's Pro-Choice Violence database. HLI researcher Dr. Brian Close has documented over 8,500 acts of violence committed at the hands of abortionists or other abortion-supporting people, including 1,251 homicides and other killings, 157 attempted murders, 28 arsons and bombings, 904 assaults, 1,908 sex crimes, including 250 rapes, 106 kidnappings, 422 cases of vandalism, 290 drug-related crimes, and 1,616 medical crimes. And this is only the tip of the iceberg. The main purpose of putting together a database of this type was to highlight the violent nature of the abortion culture. The immensity of the worldwide abortion statistics and the additional violence spawned by it is a small way to document the scope of this evil. But we must always keep in mind that the killing of even one innocent baby by abortion is evil and is worth fighting with all our lives and energies to end definitely, both in law and in the hearts of all. 12. Why is the culture of death considered universal in its scope? The breathtaking scope of the social engineering planned by the abortion promoters was summed up perfectly in a 1969 memorandum by Frederick S. Jaffe, then Vice President of Planned Parenthood World Population. This is one of the most chilling pieces of demonic shrewdness that has ever come to light. This document clearly delineates how the powers that be would radically alter the landscape of Western society. It also shows that the abortion industry's goals have actually been achieved in less than 40 short years. The following memorandum, called the Jaffe Memo, was written by Frederick S. Jaffe, Vice President of Planned Parenthood's World Population Bureau, to Bernard Berelson, then President of the Rockefeller's Population Council. It is a verbatim reproduction of the plan he proposed to fundamentally alter the Judeo-Christian way of life, marriage, and family. Note that of the three sections, the first uses the term universal impact to describe the desired changes. The Jaffe Memo. Examples of proposed measures to reduce United States fertility by universality or selectivity of universal impact. Social constraints. Restructure family. Postpone or avoid marriage. Alter image of ideal family size. Compulsory education of children. Encourage increased homosexuality. Educate for family limitation. Fertility control agents and water supply. Encourage women to work. Selective impact depending upon the socioeconomic status. Economic deterrence, incentives. Modify tax policies. Substantial marriage tax. Child tax, tax married more than single, remove parents' tax exemption, additional taxes on parents with more than one or two children in school, reduce, eliminate paid maternity leave or benefits, reduce, eliminate children's or family allowances, bonuses for delayed marriage and greater child spacing, pensions for women of 45 with less than N children, eliminate welfare payments after first children, chronic depression. Require women to work and provide few care facilities. Eliminate public finance medical care, scholarships, housing, loans, and subsidies to families with more than N children. Social controls. Compulsory abortion of out-of-wedlock pregnancies. Compulsory sterilization of all who have two children except for a few who would be allowed three. Confine childbearing to only a limited number of adults. Stock certificate type permits for children. Housing policies. Discouragement of private home ownership. Stop awarding public housing based on family size. Measures predicted on existing motivation to prevent unwanted pregnancies. Payment to encourage sterilization. Payments to encourage contraception. Payments to encourage abortion. Abortion and sterilization on demand. Allow certain contraceptives to be distributed non-medically. Improve contraceptive technology. Make contraception truly available and accessible to all. Improve maternal health with family planning, a core element. End of memo. This memo sounds like a summary of the recently passed healthcare takeover by President Obama and the U.S. Congress. It takes little imagination to see how the goals so carefully planned out in 1969 have almost universally been achieved, at least in Western society. The ultimate goal of the groups and individuals who share this ideology, not stated in this memo, but found abundantly elsewhere, is to take the same plan to the rest of the world. Pope John Paul II called this the conspiracy against life, as was mentioned before. 13. Is population control considered by the Church to be evil? If so, why? The Vatican has a long-standing feud with the proponents of population control. The Church's public debate on this issue may be more adequately described as a dramatic clash of worldviews reaching international proportions. For example, in 1994, the UN Conference on Population and Development in Cairo was dominated by Bill and Hillary Clinton's pro-abortion thugs and attempted to impose abortion on the world as an international human right. In response, Pope John Paul II wrote a sharply worded letter to Mr. Clinton and another forceful letter to every head of state in the world, objecting to this political maneuvering as a violation of both justice and basic human rights. In the end, the Holy Father had to ally the Vatican delegation with the Muslim nations because the Western, traditionally Christian nations, had all caved into the power politics of population control. This clash will only increase in time as socialists, communists, and radical feminists take over all Western institutions. The first reason the Church believes population control is evil is because it is nothing more than birth control writ large. The Church knows by long experience that the uninhibited practice of one moral evil always produces another, even greater evil. In 1968, Pope Paul VI noted in the encyclical Humanae Vitae the intrinsic connection between the widespread practice of birth control and the practice of coercive population control. He prophesied the advent of a systematic destruction of marriages, families, and even whole societies by these coercive means. Quote, "Let it be considered," he wrote, "that a dangerous weapon would thus be placed in the hands of those public authorities who take no heed of moral exigencies. Who will stop rulers from favoring, from even imposing upon their peoples, if they were to consider it necessary, the method of contraception which they judge to be more efficacious?" Unquote. All the reasons stated in question 14 below for the rejection of birth control apply equally to population control. Secondly, population control violates the sovereignty of nations and inhibits true development. The massive amount of funding given by the rich countries to population programs in poorer countries usually comes with anti-human conditions attached and skews the provision of funding for a poorer country's more primary and pressing needs. Spending millions of dollars on condoms and pills, for example, is an injustice since it derails the needed funds from the most important development works of building roads, schools, infrastructure, and programs for true human development and puts the dollars into the hands of those who wish to reduce and kill the population. The Holy See has always lobbied for authentic human and social development over inhumane population control programs and deceptive reproductive health measures. In many senses, then, the Church regards population control as an injustice, a moral evil, and a structure of sin. In the past 40 years, the Church has issued a large amount of documents, teachings, and statements objecting to population control. Although the Church does not use the term demonic to describe it, the clear implication of the Church's defensive language is that so much that we hold sacred and sovereign is under attack from Satan and his minions. The Bible describes at least two systematic programs of population control in its pages: Pharaoh's ordering the destruction of Hebrew boys, and Herod's attempt to destroy Jesus in the massacre of the Holy Innocents. All the dynamics of modern population control programs are at play in these passages. An evil government threatened by a growing population or by another king, coercive measures used against vulnerable people, the killing of innocents as a solution to the problem, etc. The only real difference between then and now is that in the modern age, females are more targeted for killing than males. 14. How is contraception spiritually evil? The spiritual evil of contraception has several dimensions to it. The first is its outright rejection of God's command to be generous with life. After God created man and woman, he ordered them to imitate his own generosity in giving life. "Be fertile and multiply," he said. It is the sin of disobedience which closes the human heart to God's express will for humanity. Instead, the use of contraception loudly proclaims that the human race will be sterile and infertile, with all the consequences that go along with that alien plan. Secondly, contraception spiritually inverts the attitude of being fertile and open to life and inculcates the attitude of closeness to life. This is known as the contraceptive mentality, which, despite those who naively say that contraception prevents abortion, leads many of its adherents directly to the doors of Planned Parenthood. The second evil of contraception, then, is the perversion of the mind, which is closed to even the possibility of giving life. The third evil of contraception is its demonic evil of dividing what God has joined. Every time we see something sacred given to us by God, the devil attempts to infiltrate and divide it. He divided Adam and Eve from each other and divided them as a couple from God and his plan. You also see him divide flesh and spirit through sin, man and woman through homosexuality, parents and children through abortion, husband and wife through divorce. family and society through social breakdown, and finally, the unitive and procreative dimensions of the marital act, as in contraception and in vitro fertilization. It is not hard to see how Planned Parenthood serves this divisive agenda either, because their programs constantly divide teens from their parents and their adherents from true faith, etc. The last dimension mentioned, dividing union and procreation, is where contraception enters the most effectively into marriage as a demonic wedge. These two dimensions of the marital act must always remain together, like two sides of a coin, for the coin to have any value. When we divorce the dimension of procreation from the marital act, we have a sterile act that opens the Pandora's box of promiscuity, disease, and homosexuality. When we separate the dimension of union from the marital act, we begin to play God and believe that man has limitless dominion over his own body, as evidenced in the hubris of embryonic stem cell research and cloning. One of the greatest spiritual evils of contraception is the deception that it propagates. Under the guise of some supposed pragmatic good of preventing unwanted pregnancies, contraception's users are seduced into thinking that they are engaging in something noble which would actually reduce the rate of child killing. I can't tell you how many intelligent and believing Christians have fallen for this lie. They need to know that all forms of chemical contraception particularly act as abortifacient drugs by chemically expelling the unborn inhabitants of the womb. In our phrase in English, swallowing the lie could not be more evident than in taking the contraceptive pills. In sum, contraception is essentially the gateway drug to an immense amount of spiritual evil. It is a bitter pill that has poisoned the human race's very gift of procreation and seduced generations of fertile men and women into sins against God and themselves. The fruit of this spiritual evil is rampant divorce, the widening of the chasm between men and women, rampant promiscuity, pornography, and militant homosexuality. All Christians must reject contraception and all its works and all its empty promises in order to truly re-evangelize our society and take it back from the poison of the evil one.